So this morning, I would like to talk about turtle power. Where's Bouchot?
Upstairs.
Huh? Oh, he's upstairs. Okay. Okay, so Bouchot, Martin Lon, Bouchot Lon, brought this back to me from Bali. It's a little turtle. It's a little turtle. He was in Bali recently. And I put it right in front of a picture of my teacher, Suzuki Roshi, on my altar. Well, what's the story here? Well, that was going to be about a 45-minute story, I think. Although it's much more ancient than that. Sometimes in retreats, I talk about practicing like a turtle. You should practice like a turtle. And my first teacher passed that on to me. And so we can call it, for want of a better term, turtle power. Turtle power. Why not? And here's something my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi, said during retreat years ago. A good example of our practice is a turtle, which has four legs, a head, and a tail. Six parts of his body, which are sometimes outside of the shell and sometimes inside. When you want to eat or go out, your four legs are out. But if they are always out, you will be caught by something. In case of danger, you should draw in the legs, head, and tail. This is retreat. For 1 week, our head, tail, and legs should be inside the shell. Then no one can touch you. In the scriptures, it says, even demons or devils cannot destroy you if the six senses are inside the shell. Buddhism, we have six senses because thinking is the sixth sense in Buddhism. And he goes on, in Zazen, we do not try to stop thinking or try not to hear or see anything. If something appears in your mind, leave it. If you hear something, hear it and just accept it. That's all. So in Native American mythology and Native American teaching, turtle power is pretty evident. Here's an example from the Ojibwes. When I first came to Minnesota, I lived in northern Minnesota and spent 40 hours a week on an Ojibwe reservation up by Orr, Minnesota. That was cool. I loved it. Anyway, the Ojibwes. Nana Bosho, the Ojibwe trickster and spirit of creation, tripped on a stone and fell on Mishikai, turtle, who was sunning on the beach. At that time, turtle was not as we know her today. She had no shell and was comprised of soft skin and bone. Turtle complained loudly to Nana Bosho to watch where he was going. Now Nana Bosho felt ashamed of his clumsiness and apologized. He wondered, what can I do to make it up to her? He wanted to do something to help his friend. I'll have to sit and think it over, he thought, as he followed the path back to his wigwam. Sometime later, he returned to the beach and called to the turtle. Turtle poked her head through the soft beach mud. Nana Bosho picked up two large shells from the shore and placed one on top of the other. He scooped up Mishikai and put her right in the middle between the shells. Nana Bosho took a deep breath and began, you will never be injured like that again. Whenever danger threatens, you can pull your legs and head into the shell for protection. Just like my teacher, right? Same thing, exactly. Nana Bosho sat behind his friend on the beach and told the turtle his thoughts. The shell itself is round like Mother Earth. It has a round hump which resembles her hills and mountains. It is divided into segments that are part of her, each different and yet connected to her. Turtle seemed very pleased with this and listened intently. Nana Bosho said, you have four legs, each representing the points of direction, north, south, east, and west. When the legs are all drawn in, all directions have disappeared. Your tail will sweep your footprints clean, so you will leave no trace, and your head will point in the direction to follow. You will be able to live in the water as well as on land, and you will be in your own house at all times. Turtle approved of her new self and thanked Nanaboshō for her wisdom. Moving now in a thick shell, she pushed herself along the shore and disappeared into the water. So ever since, Turtle has been special to the Ojibwe. To this day, she continues to grace Mother Earth, still proudly wearing these two shells. So you will be able to live in the water as well as on land, and you will be in your own house at all times. So by doing this practice, this Zazen practice, coming into this house and just withdrawing our senses, withdrawing our thinking, withdrawing trying to get anything, this house gives us protection. Good protection. Sometimes we don't realize it, but the protection is always there. And if we keep doing this practice, we discover that this house is always protecting us. We're always in the house. But you have to really practice with a lot of determination and through hardships to realize that that shell of protection, Nanaboshō, gave to the Ojibwes, and Suzuki gave to us. Well, somebody gave it to him. You know, it's all right. It's always present. Always present. So your tail will sweep your footprints clean. So you will be able, so you will leave no trace, and your head will point in the direction to follow. So the turtle sweeps sand with its tail and erases all traces. So when I was with my teacher, my first teacher years ago, and he insisted that we clean up after doing, clean the house where we were doing Zazen after Zazen, even though we all had more important things to do. We would clean a kitchen or a bathroom, and we had to do the whole thing. We had to do the whole thing. I had to get to class, but no, we had to do the whole thing completely. No hairs in the sink. No, nothing. But that's by doing that, by doing it completely, we leave no trace. We leave no trace. And that helps us with our mind. That helps us with our consciousness. If we can leave no trace physically by completely doing something, it helps us leave no trace in our consciousness. That's the turtle teaching. Turtle teaching. So I quit my other job a year and a half ago. Got to be a very big job. And I had more than 600 staff working for me. That's a lot. And I had Zen Center at the same time. So I had lists. I made lists of things to do. Lists. And I had never been well organized, but I had to get well organized. So I had a list every day and every night. Then I had the Zen stuff in one color and People Incorporated stuff in another color. But always I found myself not wanting to lean into the future, feeling an urgency about moving on to the next thing. And then I had to draw on my turtle power just to come back and just do this completely, whatever it is, just be completely with it and find composure there, the composure of your turtle power, your girl power, always here. Not leaning into the future. When you notice that you're leaning into the future, come back to just what you're doing. Come back. Not blotting out the present because you don't like it. If you're really with the present, there's nothing to dislike. There's nothing to dislike. Absolutely nothing. So, instead of focusing on getting to the next more interesting, pressing event, this event, that's the teaching of the turtle. That's the teaching of leaving no trace. So through our daily life and our zazen both, we develop turtle power. We notice that we're not rushing so much. We notice that we're kind of easily bringing a task to a completion before we move on, even though we've got 33 other things to do. We notice that we can take care of the activity that we're involved with in a gentle, open, meticulous, but not fussy way. Not fussy. So we discover that. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, Dylan says, but I was so much younger then. I mean, I was so much older then. Excuse me. I'm younger than that now. This is how we become young. We get old. Our body gets old, but we get younger and younger inside. Younger and younger and younger through this practice. Do you believe it? You don't have to believe it. Do the practice. Do the practice. You will become very young. It's a turtle practice, that's all. Turtle practice. But because we get caught by our desires to get away from the past and to move into something more promising, we create in Buddhist vernacular veils, which I've talked about over the years, veils that we get caught up in. These veils, there are two primary kinds of, and then we don't see our turtle nature, we don't feel our turtle nature, because we're getting caught by these veils. Two primary veils in traditional Buddhist thought. Although, you know, you can read other traditional Buddhist thought and there will be other primary veils. But this is, anyway, the two primary veils, varanas, klesha varana and jnaya varana. Klesha varana are the veils of emotion. We get caught by emotion. We all know that. We get caught by it. We get caught by our anger, we get caught by our sadness, we get caught by our fear. It's a veil. And then we think that veil is impenetrable. Impenetrable. So we can't ever access our turtle power. So we just have to see it. Have to see it with openness. See it. And see that it's just a veil. Just a veil. And the second kind of veil are the jnaya, isn't. Second kind of veil is jnaya, J-N-E-Y-A, jnaya varana, which is the veil of self, of little self, of little Tim, of little Wanda. Regardless how mature we become and how many mountains we conquer, we feel little inside. You know, even Donald Trump, I think he thinks he's just a tiny guy. He's got to put all his energy out because he's just a tiny little kid. He more than anybody. No, not to put him down, but he more than anybody. We're just little. And we feel separate. We feel alone. And turtle power sounds wonderful, but I don't feel that. I just feel, life is hard. I want a little more comfort. I want a little more possessions, although people in Zen don't do possessions so much. We want a little more friends, a little more enlightenment, a little more ability to be a bodhisattva and really be out there for people's pain. And then we create a veil, talking about that, thinking about that, ruminating about it, comparing and judging, because we need to feel loved and appreciated. We need to feel we have some level of competency. So that's second kind of veil. And these veils become, we get just entangled in these veils. So we don't even think we're practicing Zen when we're sitting on the cushion. We're just fighting with these veils. But if we're just with them, we see that they're only veils. We see that. And that's the beginning of freedom. That's the beginning of freedom. So a friend of mine, started a business. I worked for several years starting a business, and then he worked for maybe 5 years developing this business, a small business. And now he's going bankrupt. And he's 50 years old, and he started the business when he was 40. 10 years of, he had a vision, a wonderful vision. He did hard work. He put himself into it. And, you know, but the, as I was saying to Wanda, the research on entrepreneurial activities suggests that 80% of them fail. So that's, well, being an entrepreneur ain't easy. Ain't easy. So here he is, 50 years old. 50 years old. And he said to my friend, I hate myself. I hate myself. And that's how he's feeling. He has to tell all his investors that he's going bankrupt with your money that I talked you into giving to me so I could do this wonderful thing. I got to tell you, or maybe I won't show up. Maybe I'll go to another country. Right? Hard, hard. The little self is trying to get something. And then, of course, sometimes the little self succeeds. Succeeds, yes. I built the Trump Tower, yes. Brags to everybody. I built the Burka Tower and the Zen Center here for $32 million. And the little self is always like this, always churned up. Always churned up. But if we do turtle practice, we experience some contentment. It's right here. It's always right here. Just here. Just here. It's not dependent on success. We want success, sure, but it's not dependent on that. It's not contingent. It's not contingent on anything. So my first teacher and my second teacher, they weren't caught too much by their veils. Not caught too much. They saw that their veils were light, thin, insubstantial. Light, thin. Yeah, the anger comes in. Yeah, the fear comes in. But we don't have to make a federal case about it. We don't have to have a cow about it, as we used to say when we were kids. It just comes in. So, and we see through it. It's just a veil. As I say in retreats, usually I say this the second or third day of retreats, and people are kind of looking at me. I say, it's just made of gossamer, you guys. These veils are only gossamer. And so when we do our turtle practice, our dissatisfaction with ourselves and our lives falls away by regularly going inside our turtle shell. And our turtle power naturally arises. And we discover fulfillment. And just taking one turtle step, just one turtle step, and another turtle step. So I'd like to suggest that there are five key features of turtle power, of our turtle nature. One, the ability to stay grounded, even in moments of disturbance and chaos, to stay grounded. The earth supports us, even regardless of how what's going on outside, regardless of what's going on emotionally. We can come back and touch the earth, touch the earth. Supposedly, when Buddha attained enlightenment, the ascetics who had been hanging out with him, they heard about his enlightenment, and they came to see, is he a new man? What's the deal here? And they looked at him, and all he did was touch the earth. He just touched the earth. And they felt something. They felt some stillness, some composure, some connectedness. Second feature is slowing down, pacing yourself. Yes, you have 33 things on your list to do. I don't have 33 things on my list anymore. I've been retired for a year and a half, but all of a sudden I got all these Zen things on my list. I have 28 Zen things. Well, that's how we are, isn't it? If we want to be alive and engaged in the world, we develop things we want to do, things that are vitally important to us. That's cool. That's cool. Slowing down, pacing ourselves. Number three, determination and persistence. So my first teacher, Suzuki, I said, you know, what's the most important thing in this practice, the Buddhism that you're teaching? He said, the most important thing is come every morning and sit with me. And I asked for other things, and he said, no, that's it. Like, I want him to explain me the Heart Sutra, which we chanted. He said, no, just come sit with me. And then he said, chant it. But chant it with your ears, because I can't carry a tune. And he didn't. And I was making a ruckus in my chanting. You guys may not know. Well, some of you know that, what I'm talking about. He said, come sit with me every morning and chant with your ears. That's all he said. But that's turtle practice. That's turtle practice. And so I just did it. I don't know why. I hadn't done much of anything in my life before then. I almost flunked out of college and, you know, all kinds of things. I won't get into those sordid details. You don't want to hear about those. You probably do, but I'm not going to tell you today. I just showed up every morning. I showed up every morning, and he said, and when you can't sit with me, sit with someone else. So I did that. I couldn't sit with him. I sat with someone else in my hometown on the West Coast. And so I did that. And then after about 3 years, I was thinking, this is stupid. I'm not making any progress. And my mind is just as out of control as it was in the beginning. And plus, he was not a good teacher for teaching me about Buddhism. And I saw all kinds of other teachers who taught you about Buddhism. Buddhist psychology is pretty cool. There's a lot of stuff you can learn. So I was looking around, I was thinking around. And then I was sitting with him in one-to-one, called Doksan. And he said, you are so determined. And I thought, oh, I guess he thinks I'm determined. So then I stayed and was really determined because he told me I was so determined. Now, I guess that's real Buddhist psychology. He didn't know anything about Buddhist psychology, but he knew about Buddhist psychology, right? Human psychology. Oh, you were so determined. I thought, oh, he notices me. He pays attention to me. He sees that I'm here. He cares about me. That made all the difference in the world. All the difference in the world. Because I was needy. We're needy as human beings. Little ego human beings. So the hare attains enlightenment right away. The hare attains enlightenment, wins. The turtle's just going one step. The hare brags about his enlightenment in a tower, and builds another enlightenment tower, goes to study in Japan with someone who's going to create his third enlightenment tower, and then all the great Rinzai teachers and all the great ritual. The turtle just takes a step. Just takes a step. And then that step feels connectedness to the earth, to the sky, to the trees around, to people's suffering. Just feels it. Just feels it. And this is how we actually change our biochemistry. We do it. But we don't do it. We don't do it. It changes. And the fourth aspect of turtle power is resilience. We become resilient. So, with my first teacher, I tell both these stories a lot of times, and one is in the book, so I'll give, in my first book. So I'll give a brief. So I was with my teacher once after Zazen, I think, and I saw him with my first teacher. My first teacher was Suzuki Roshi. My second one was Katagiri Roshi, who ordained me here. And I actually sewed this raksu with him in probably about 1976 or 7. I don't know. Probably 1976. No, not this one. I sewed the blue one with him. Well, anyway, you don't need to get into that. You don't need to get into that. Resilience. So my teacher was dressed in white shorts, and he had a cap on his head, like a sailor cap, down over his bald head. And I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to play tennis." And I said, "You're playing tennis with who?" "With Betty." Well, Betty had pretty bad depression and it was the dark months of the year. She wasn't able to sit in zazen during the dark months of the year. It's just too But I guess she played tennis. I don't know. So I said, "I'm going to play tennis with Betty." And I said, "Oh, I didn't know you knew how to play tennis." He said, "Oh, I don't, but Betty does." Then a couple months later, I picked him up at the airport in San Francisco, where he'd been in Montana visiting Trudy Dixon at her parents' ranch. And I picked him up, and I was driving him back to the Zen Center, and I said, "Oh, did you have a good trip?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Oh, what did you do?" And he said, "We rode horses." And I said, "I didn't think you knew how to ride a horse." He said, "Oh, I didn't know, but the horse knows." Resilience comes from this practice. Turtle is pretty resilient. Hare is not resilient. It's so caught by trying to get ahead. And then when he's at the finish line, he's really not finished. He's got to go do it again and do it again and do it again. Fifth one is emotional strength or emotional fluidity. Emotional strength for us is emotional fluidity. The anxiety comes through, just a veil, just a gossamer veil. The elation comes through. Well, we enjoy it, but we don't cling to it and make something special out of it. The boredom comes through from sitting in this dull retreat, this dull zazen. Gee, do I really have to do a whole 40 minutes this morning? I get wigged out just sitting here. But resiliency. We just see it. We go in our house. We withdraw our senses. Whether we're here in the Zendo or in the community, we can take a breath. As Norman Fisher said, we can take our three breaths wherever we are. Withdraw in. And the emotion just falls away. It comes back later. That's okay. Everything comes back. There's no perfection here. It falls away. So those are the five features of our turtle nature that I invented for your benefit this morning. Or maybe for my benefit. Someone's benefit. So here's some information. The common snapping turtle has barely changed in 210 million years. Chelydra serpentina is the ancestor of about 80% of all turtles alive today. Chelydra serpentina. Sharply clawed feet, hard pointed beak, dark and dented carapace, sharp bony plated jaws, thick spiky tail. It's related to the dinosaurs. But the dinosaurs lasted this long, and the turtle has lasted 210 million years. Chelydra serpentina practice transforms us into serpents. It does. It transforms us into nagas. That's the Buddhist term for a serpent. Nagas. Biologically, the serpent and the turtle are very closely related. Very closely. So through our turtle practice, we discover not only our turtle nature, but our serpent turtle nature. Nagas, Buddhism, N-A-G-A, Nagas, serpents as nature spirits, as protectors of springs, wells, and rivers, and Lake Calhoun. They may take human form. They're guardians of our spiritual treasure. They're guardians of the stillness that's right here in our shell. They're guardians of this well-being that's here. They bring fertility and prosperity, and they're probably their most well-known manifestation is Nagarjuna. 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 Second century, the contemporary era. The guy has given classes on Nagarjuna probably 3 or 4 years.
You have Naga right over here.
Uh-huh. Nagarjuna. Second century of the contemporary era. What was his? He was a shapeshifter. Nagarjuna, a shapeshifter. Through his turtle practice, he learned to shapeshift. Meaning that any belief that someone came to him with, he would point out it's the flawed nature of the belief. Any belief, everybody, all the philosophical points of view, all the spiritual teachings, he would point out their flaw. He said, they're empty. Steve Hagen used to do a course some of you probably took it. It's like 10 weeks long where you just went through. Right, you took it, Larry.
A year
on Nagarjuna. Uh-huh. I hear it's wonderful. I hear it was a wonderful course. Maybe it's still being taught, huh? Nagarjuna, shapeshifter. All our beliefs that we cling to and we make veils out of, they're all empty. And then Nagarjuna sounds like a nihilist. But what does he say? Since all is empty, all is possible. Since all is empty, all is possible. This is not nihilism. This is love. This is romance with everything, with all existence, with all non-existence. Since all is empty, all these veils are empty. We can just be alive. All is possible. And then Nagarjuna says, the worst mistake of all is to believe in emptiness. Because then you create a new veil. Oh, emptiness. Emptiness. Shapeshifter. You become a shapeshifter. Not that hard. Easy, but you'd have to do the practice. Do the practice. And the Nagas are protectors. The Nagas protect. In the scriptures, they're always protecting people. In the Mucha Linda Sutta, one of the Pali Suttas, Buddha was sitting in deep meditation as a storm approached. A Naga king named Mukalinda spread his great cobra hood over the Buddha to shelter him from the rain and cold. Turtle protection, turtle serpent protection. So by doing this practice of facing the wall every day, or if you can't do it every day, every other day, or if you can't do it every other day, every third day, and if you can't do it every third day, just breathing when you're walking to the car. I mean, really, breathing with the sky, with the plants, with the feeling of your body moving. Do this turtle practice and you'll discover this wonder. You'll discover this wonder. You'll slip through the veils. You'll slip through them. They'll just slip away. So our practice is not like turning on the lights. We can't just decide to break through the veils on our zafu one morning, one retreat. Oh, finally I'm doing retreat. Oh, this is what happens in retreat. Sorry. Probably doesn't happen. Probably the lights won't go on. probably the veils will get all tangled up and seem impenetrable to you. Be a turtle. Do turtle practice. No problem. No problem. So this raksu that I probably saw it about 17 or 18 years ago, give or take a couple of years maybe. Actually, I think somebody sewed it for me. Rosemary probably sewed it for me. Is that right, Rosemary?
I wasn't going to say anything.
Was it? Well, it must have not been 17 or 18 years ago then.
You sewed it.
All right. Anyway, I take this home sometimes. I have an altar at home too, and I take it home and put it there. And after I've been bringing it home for a few years, my daughter-in-law was spending time with us, and my daughter-in-law has allergies. And Linda said, "What's that smell of incense in the house?" And I said, "I don't know. We don't burn incense. You know, I don't burn it because of SEMA, right?" And she said, "Yes, but there's a smell." So she's sniffing in my office, and she, it's in your raksu. And I said, "Well, I bring it home every week or so for 5 years." And she said, "Well, all right, but it's finally, the incense is finally in there from you sitting every morning at the Zen Center. And you better take it back to the Zen Center. I don't want it in the house anymore." So I brought it back to the Zen Center. Takes a long time for the incense to penetrate the fabric. A lot of sitting for that to happen. A lot of sitting. For a long time, you don't smell any incense in this. Once it gets its incense odor, it won't lose it if it really penetrates. It doesn't lose it. Doesn't lose it. We don't lose turtle power. We don't lose it. So I haven't been around her too much lately, and I'm so happy to be here today. I was not been around too much because I was ill for 6 weeks, and then I got better just in time to go to Paris to see my grandsons. Wow, that was lucky. Now I'm back. I'm happy to be back. I was ill for 6 weeks. I have Lyme's disease, as many of you know, and it's recurring. And this time it went on for longer than I remember it ever going on. And my memory is getting more clouded. At about the end of the fourth week, I was thinking, "Oh yeah, well I'm probably not going to get better. You know, I'm 73 years, almost 73 years old. I'm prime. It's been 4 weeks, and I've done everything. You know, I eat all the right foods, and I do everything. I'm good, you guys. I'm not generally good, but when you want to stay alive, you're good, you know." So I thought, well, probably not going to get better. And I think I told a couple people, probably not going to get better. And then I said, "But that's okay. I've had a good life. You know, it's okay. I can just be here as a turtle and doing my turtle bed practice." And I thought, well, yeah, good life. I thought, "Oh, I'll miss my grandkids growing up. I'll miss that. And, I'll miss my second book, which Wanda has been working on. But Wanda can do that. She does those books anyway. She does great at them." And then I thought, "I'll miss helping people here at Zen Center tap into their turtle power. I'll miss that." I thought, well, maybe I can do that after I die. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe so. We don't know, do we? We don't know. But then I got better. So here I am. And when I get better, I seem to get all the way better. So, I don't know. So the turtle, I used to have turtles when I was a kid, pet turtles. Tritillarium, or whatever you call it, I had in Palo Alto, my hometown. It was a good place to have turtles. We could just keep it outside in the backyard in a Tritillarium or whatever it was. Turtles, those of you know, but you don't have to know much, they have very hard shells. They have a hard shell on the top and a hard shell underneath. And then inside, they're very sensitive. They're very tender inside. So through our practice, we develop some toughness in our shell, some toughness in our ability just to withdraw and just to not be bowled over by difficult emotions, difficult conditions. We don't hang on to negative energies. We don't get knocked off course completely by yucky sights or sounds or smells or tastes or sensations, because our shell becomes hard. This is good. That's our good turtle shell. At the same time, we discover how tender we are inside. How tender we are. We are tender. We are tender. We are sensitive. If you really do your meditation wholeheartedly, you see how sensitive you are to just one thought. How one thought kind of reverberates through everything. How sensitive you are to that. You think you shouldn't be that sensitive, but it's okay. It's wonderful. Be that sensitive. The shell is protecting you. You can be that sensitive. To the slightest thought, the slightest sensation, the slightest feeling, you're sensitive to every feeling that comes up. You'd rather not. You'd rather have some deep concentration. But this is really true meditation practice, just to be sensitive to it, just to open your heart to it without judging it, without evaluating it. Just to open your heart. You're protected by the shell, so you can do that. You can do that. And you can be sensitive to other people's pain. You feel sensitivity. You feel tender to their pain. People who are suffering, who don't have as much support as we do. I mean, I've been so lucky in my life not to be marginalized. Only thing that ever marginalized me in my life was being 5'6". And my grandmother used to think, oh, I don't think he's even going to get to be 5'6". And so she took me to a doctor in San Francisco to try to give me all kinds of growth hormones. my grandson's really small too. Being a small boy is hard. That's the only real suffering that I ever, discrimination that I ever had. It was discrimination, the little kids, you know. Well, I won't get into that. But you feel a tenderness for other people's pain. It just happens through your wholehearted being available to your life. You feel that sensitivity. And so you become a bodhisattva without trying. You just become a bodhisattva without trying. That's part of your turtle serpent power. That's why the serpent protected Buddha, the cobra protected Buddha, protect lots of, the serpents go to different waters and protect people while they're drinking. And you can read about all the Buddhist mythology. They all do protect us, stuff to protect us. When we feel down or confused or just hurt. And they do that without getting wigged out by it. When we feel someone's pain, there's no need to get wigged out by it. If we get wigged out by it, we can't help them in their pain. If you have a sleepless night about someone's pain, that's fine. You need to take care of yourself, but that doesn't help their pain. It doesn't help their pain. The best way to help their pain is just to feel empathically and then move out of that empathy. Do something based on that empathy rather than churning it over and over. It doesn't help. It's not turtle power. So, we become turtles. We're able to live on water, live on earth, live in the mountains, live in the salt water, live in the fresh water, live in Lake Calhoun, turtles live in polluted places. You know that? They live in polluted waters. They're just there. You'll find them right there in a yucky, polluted place. Just living, just breathing, just being alive. We can do this. This is our lives. We can open up to this. We can practice this way. So, because we realize that we come to realize that we carry our homes on our back, and then we can feel at ease. Because here is our home on our back. In Chinese Buddhism, the turtle is the animal who carries Mother Earth on her back. Mother Earth on his back. So we carry Mother Earth on our back. Well, not heavy. Not heavy. And turtles are, as I said in the earlier in my talk, turtles are prevalent in a lot of Native American spirituality. And turtles are often turtle as grandmother, turtle grandmother. I want to end by talking a little bit about the Kiowas. The Kiowas are a Native American tribe that came down from Canada to South Dakota, and then as we white people, we Europeans came in, and we drove them down from South Dakota to Arkansas, and from there to Kansas, and then there to Texas and Oklahoma, and then they were forced to do a reservation in Oklahoma. And Grandmother Turtle was important to them, Grandmother Turtle. And they would have to resist resisted the expansion of us Europeans as much as possible, as much as possible. And they fought. They were good warriors. So here's a Kiowa, what would I call it? A Kiowa chant, maybe. When you're going into battle against these horrible Europeans who are out to annihilate you or something. You don't know what it is, but you. So here's how it goes. And since I can't carry a tune, I don't even know what the tune is. Luckily, so it doesn't matter. I live, but not forever. Grandmother Turtle, you remain. I live, but not forever. Grandmother Turtle, you remain. I live, but not forever. Grandmother, you alone remain forever. So that's what I want to say today. And I'll be glad to take 5 or so minutes of questions or comments from anybody. Yeah.
I think, is it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Pardon?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, is it the song on that? Turtles in a Half Shell, Turtle Powers?
Oh, hey.
That's what was going through my head this whole time.
Sounds good to me. Is that all you know of it?
Well, I remember watching it as a kid, but I remember the song was Turtles in a Hard Shell, Turtle Powers.
Okay, all right. Okay. Yeah, Pat. Oh, thank you, Pat. Thank you. Mm-hmm. What else, you guys?
It kind of freaks me out. It's like, Steve. Donald Trump, you know, it was great. He's been, like, built the Trump Tower, and little guy that, and he's not the only cause behind this, but, like, he was in West Virginia when he was the president, I think, when Kasich and Cruz had dropped out, and he's talking about these great machines that he really loved, because he loved big buildings, he loved these big machines, and they were mountaintop removal graders for coal mining, and he was going to bring back coal mining jobs. And then immediately after, I think this is probably, you know, scientifically true, they said, coal mining jobs aren't gone. They're going to these huge machines.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's to me, I get freaked out because, you know, the clashes are so small, and Donald Trump's clashes are really small. He's not the only force behind these things, but, I mean, this what is not small is mountaintop removal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't seem to be going away.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, well, I agree with you. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. So we have to do our best to both practice and engage in the world to help people realize that those mountaintops are our parents, our grandparents. There's no grandmother turtle manifesting in the earth if we don't take care of those. Thank you. What else? Jeff.
Everything changes. That lake has a new name. Medemakaska. Medemakaska.
Uh-huh. Cool. I knew they were going to give it a new name. I knew that.
They didn't change that? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're kidding.
They didn't change it, they added it. There's still a lot of meetings with the Dakota underway because they want it to be exclusively Medemakaska.
Because they wanted it to what?
To be exclusively an ancient name.
Uh-huh.
Because the Dakota lived.
Yes, I know.
And they still practice.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Could you guys hear what they're talking about? Barely?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, they're talking about this new name for the lake, and this new name, which is the old name, which is the original name, that the Lakota, was it the Lakota?
Dakota.
Yeah, Lakota, Dakota, gave it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that for Lake Calhoun?
Yep, Lake Calhoun. Yep, yep.
Jeff, what's it mean? What's the meaning of the name?
It has something to do with looms, I guess. Gathering place of looms or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there's time for one more, if there is one. If not, we'll just move on. Anything more?
That's good, thank you.
Benton, huh?
Your Rakusu is incensed.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, let's let it be incensed then. Uh-huh. We get incensed sometimes. Being incensed is okay. It's part of human nature to get incensed, and we can just appreciate the odor of being incensed. And it passes through like everything else. Don't you think, Benton? Okay. Thanks a lot, you guys.